At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts, your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic. The Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com. Well, hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. Friday, 4th of October, episode 57. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast, joined today by the majestic Tom Mologany, host of the YouTube channel State of Charge and senior editor at Inside EVs, as well as longtime EV journalist Dominic Yoni, host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic, and he's on the road this week as well. Can't wait to hear about his EV adventures. And our special guest this week is Gleb Nikiforov, founder and CEO of United Chargers. So we'll get into the news of the week. The big, big headline story that we must kick off is with a charging company leaving North America with huge implications. And for that, but that's why we have our special guest. Delighted to have our good friend Gleb, owner of United Chargers, on the podcast today. If you are new to us and you've been hiding under a rock, United Charge is all about researching, developing, manufacturing the highest quality EV charging stations, all manufactured locally in Ontario, Canada as well. Very high quality, very affordable, and strong advocates for the future of electric vehicles. Gleb's been on before as a guest. Always interesting to hear his thoughts on the future of mobility and energy as well. You can check out the Grizzly range, of course. We recommend it every week. You hear my voice in the advert at the beginning. Saying that, and you know, if we're honest, he is the genius that bankrolls this whole operation. He's Gleb's like the character, is it Ruben in Ocean's 11, the guy that sits poolside that bankrolls the whole thing. In which case, Dom, you can be Brad Pitt, and of course, that means that Tom Mologany is George Clooney's character. I'll be Julia Roberts or something. So, Tom, over to you. I don't know where I've gone with this, but yeah, Gleb, as always, thank you for your support of the podcast. Huge news, Tom, about Juicebox this week. What happened?
Yeah, so NLX Way, the company that makes the Juicebox EV chargers, sent out emails 2 days ago to their customers and to stakeholders out of the blue saying, we're shutting down. We're going to turn off our servers. We're pulling out. You know, ciao. We're going back to Italy. It's an Italian company. And, you know, amazing how abruptly they did it, you know, without giving anybody any notice. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you have a level 2 juice box like I have behind me on the both sides of me here, it'll still charge your EV, but it becomes a dumb charger because it won't have app connectivity. So, you know, you paid $700 for a smart charger that can do all kind of stuff. And, you know, you got, you know, what you could buy for $300 or $400. So that's the least of the issues. Bigger issue is NL's public charging networks, where there are DC fast chargers and level 2 chargers. They require the server access to work. They're bricked. So immediately on Thursday, I woke up to, I don't even know, I lost count at like 50 or 60 emails from followers and just people out there. Like one person was like, I've got 5 NL DC fast chargers. They don't work. You know, what do I do now? And I'm like, listen, let me digest this. I'll get back to you. You know, maybe there's going to be an alternate solution, but yeah, they just screwed all their customers, or not even offering any type of off ramp to the people that invested in their company, bought their equipment and everything. Horrible thing to do. So I was putting together a video on this, and Gleb and I talk every now and then about industry stuff. Gleb's really in touch with what's going on in the world of EV charging. He needs to be. He runs this company, so he knows a lot of the stakeholders. He knows things, what's going on behind the scenes that we don't know about sometimes. So I reached out to him, and he was like running 1,000 miles an hour. Like, this, we can't allow this to happen. If this might be the first domino, you might see other dominoes. I'm like, all right, Gleb, hold down, calm down. Let me talk to you. He's like, I haven't slept all night. I've been thinking about this. I'm like, well, this isn't your company, you know? And he's like, that, I don't care. This is the industry. I don't want the industry to fail. And this is very bad for this reason and this reason. So I actually set up an interview with Gleb. I made a video. It's coming on right after the Batteries Included podcast. It's like a 40-minute video on this whole NL thing, and Gleb's got a 20-minute interview right in the middle. But I said, that's not even enough. Why don't you come on the podcast tomorrow for a few minutes and just talk a little bit, like summarize what you and I went over yesterday, because it's really interesting what Gleb thinks is a serious problem that we have here in North America. They don't necessarily have it in Europe. So it's not like an unsolvable problem, but we have it here. So, Gleb, why don't you give us a little bit of thoughts on what's the main issue with this problem? I mean, companies are going to fail. Businesses are going to go out of business. We saw that with Ecotality, back in the beginning of the EV world with the Blink network, and they ripped out all those chargers. This is going to happen. But why is this particularly troubling, what's going on right now?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Tom and Martin. I think we need to adjust our advertisement at the beginning to say the OCPP-enabled charger. That's what I was rooting for since the beginning. Since the beginning, all our smart chargers are talking in native OCPP language. So what is OCPP? OCPP has nothing to do. It's Open Charge Point Protocol. Nothing to do with Respectful Charge Point. It's a standard made out in Netherlands, and that's basically the language on which the charger communicates with the server. So we know that language, and we can connect our charger to any server which speaks the same language. Now, in North America, what happened is all the companies which build EV chargers and software to them, it comes naturally, like everybody wants to be Apple, and they all talk in their proprietary language. So we don't know how the charger communicates with the server, and it's practically impossible to figure it out if you don't know. If you don't have an engineer who wrote the code, you don't know how they talk. And what happens is that when NL shut down their servers, right, the communication is lost now. They all claim they're OCPP compliant, like I'm going to call names like ChargePoint, Floor, Blink, they all say they are OCPP compliant. It might be that the reality is a little bit different and they are OCPP compliant on their cloud server side. So they have a connector on the server which talks OCPP, and if they allow somebody to talk to that connector, then they can route it through their server to their charger and do the communication. But still, between their charger and their cloud, they talk in their own language. So we don't know how they communicate. We cannot intercept that or do anything. If they shut down the server, that's it. Nothing we can do. Nothing we can do, right?
But it's not that way in Europe.
Not that way in Europe at all. Europe has been developed differently. In the United States, the Obama kickstarted TV program by giving away hundreds of millions of dollars to few companies like Blink and ChargePoint to jumpstart it, and they all started to become like a hen and chicken. So they want their own proprietary stuff. They want to collect their chickens, and they don't want to let go of the chickens, right? And that's the greed, investor greed as well, which brought this all up. And so how many cell phone companies do you know right now that doesn't allow you to take your phone number with you if you decided to leave? That many companies in the EV charging business will be proprietary in a couple of years. Zero, nada, none. So that is dying off, unfortunately, or fortunately, but it's opening the market to the new opportunities. hundreds of new companies will evolve. They're going to build beautiful software, which will be interoperable. They will compete for the customer. The prices will go down from what you're paying $25, $30 per month right now for a commercial EV charger to be there. It's probably going to be worth $3, $4, I don't know. And people will compete for customers. People will provide more. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's great for everyone, right? And it's going to lower the cost of ownership of commercial chargers, which are over the roof right now, and they are not. There's no ROI. If you buy commercial EV charger, well, you cannot make money. That's why we don't have infrastructure. So it's this problem, and it starts to dissolve right now. Like this is, I think, this is the first bird flying out of the nest, and now, right? And if nobody, think about it, if nobody bought them out, if they were not able to sell their, they have probably $30, $40 million worth of equity and IP there, at least. If nobody bought them and they didn't find an investor and they just, as I said to Tom, rage quit, just shut the door, shut down the servers and said to everybody pretty much goodbye in a not in a very nice way, right? Then if potentially, we all know that ChargePoint is in a financial trouble. If that same situation will happen with ChargePoint, who will bail out ChargePoint? There are 10 times more money, right? So we might have a sequence of events, and I'm very much afraid because that will bring us back in like 5 years in the electrification. Customers who buy a charger twice, if like juice box customer will buy ChargePoint now, let's say, and ChargePoint goes out of business in 6 months, God forbid, but this is possible, and those customers will be pretty much paying twice for the brick charger. And how? What about consumer confidence? What about them? We must mandate the hardware to be OCPP compliant or any open protocol compliant on the hardware level. So basically, when you plug your charger, you know, it's hardwired, which is better hardwired by electrician, and you initially connect to the charger with via Wi-Fi, you have an option how to connect your charger to a different server. We, on our website, just put a link in to show how exactly what we need to do to connect it. That's it. Very simple. I dare ChargePoint, Blink, Floor, and others to show the same information on their website. So customers feel confident because I might not know if they're really OCP or they're not OCP. Nobody knows. Nobody talks about it. And now test their OCPP too. And what we're experiencing right now is quite different, right? By the way, ChargeLab, Epic Charging, and other companies are working really, really hard right now to try to bring back Enel customers, and I wish them the best success.
So, Gleb, let me ask you, let's bring it back to today. Can you help me understand, why is it that the residential kind of retail customers, if you like, they just turn into a dumb charger? So you lose the internet connectivity, you can't change the amperage, you can't go into the app to have a look at your energy usage, take part in energy trading schemes, like some of the energy companies were even recommending the Enel chargers, the juice box stuff as one or two that their customers must buy to take part in energy trading schemes, and now they're left out, you know, lots of liability perhaps there, but they become dumb, they'll still work. Gleb, why are the commercial ones, that I say commercial, this can still mean that if you have a bunch of chargers in an apartment block, okay, that's just a bunch of residents, but they maybe went with a commercial operation to put in into where they live, a multi-family dwelling or something, why do they completely stop working? What happens in the back end? Okay. Why won't they just become dumb?
Okay, so for the home chargers designed, supposed to be designed to work without internet connectivity as dumb chargers. Not all of them do, but Enel does, Juicebox does. Grizzly Smart does. If the Grizzly Smart is not connected to Wi-Fi or internet, it will work as a dumb charger. Not all of them do, but most of them do. And that's normal because at home you don't need to have internet connectivity. The commercial chargers, on the other way, they will not work without connectivity because they are basically puppets controlled by the cloud. So cloud can tell them start charging or stop charging. That's why when we lose communication between the hardware and the cloud service, when Enel shut down the servers, this communication lost, and chargers don't know what to do. They cannot receive a command from the cloud to start charging. Now, we have very bad news and so bad news. Very bad news, all the Enel-made hardware probably will not be recoverable because, again, we don't know how it works. But Enel as well used third-party hardware like Tritium, which basically went bankrupt recently again, right? So the whole industry is shaking, you know? That's the reasons behind that. I can explain more if we have time, but there are reasons behind that, and I pretty much know how to solve it. Those hardware which are not Enel-made, if this hardware, most of it is OCPP-enabled at the hardware level, they can be recovered, can be turned over to ChargeLab or Epic, and those companies are offering help and support. If you are a commercial charger owner of Enel hardware or Enel software, please contact Epic Charging or ChargeLab, and they will try to help you.
And I will say ChargeLab reached out to me yesterday and sent me a couple of emails saying, please inform your followers we're working very hard to recover, the Enel public chargers. You know, we're working hard. We believe that there's a path for us to be able to get at least some of them operating. They didn't say what Gleb just said as far as Enel proprietary versus third party, but I believe that is the case. If you operate Enel DC fast chargers, particularly if they're third party hardware, it's worthwhile to reach out to companies that Gleb just mentioned because they might be able to get it going.
If they will enable the original juice box hardware, we need to give them a medal and they are heroes because this is the mission impossible, in my opinion. If they will manage to do it, we need to give them an award or something. But the situation can be fixed like this. Enel just need to turn on their servers for a month and give access to all the companies to their servers so they can understand how it works. And they have bright people out there. They will figure it out in a week. Figure it out how it works, take them over. Make sure the customers are supported. And that may be even kickstart, jumpstart the new OCPP trend in North America, you know? It's maybe jumpstart. There's 100,000 customers out there. I don't have words. Like I didn't sleep all night 2 days ago, as Tom said, right? I had a bare sleep today because I can't comprehend it. What happened? Like, I'm speechless.
Well, you described it great. You said they rage quit. You know, I can't understand why they wouldn't announce they're closing down and say, you know, we're in 2 months, we're shutting down our servers.
Yeah.
We'll work with third party companies to get them up and working. It's almost as if they're a spoiled child that said, well, I'm taking my ball with me. Nobody can play with it. I'm going
home.
You know,
exactly. And they did the maximum damage to the industry. So if we are at mercy of emotions of CEO of the company, how good is this? It's not good at all. It's bad. Like, we cannot be as a hostage of some guy's today's emotion. He woke up at the bed, and then boom.
So for some context, for anyone that doesn't know, Enel is, as Tom said at the beginning, an Italian energy company. According to Wikipedia, one of the top 60 companies globally in the world by revenue, something like $150 billion in revenue. I think it's 2022 data. And right. So they're not short of a pound or two or a dollar or two to do the right thing. They produce electricity. They have huge investments around the world. I think they're second in terms of energy producer behind EDF here in Europe. And so they are an enormous organization with tens of thousands of employees. Now, again, I'm interested in the liability aspect of this because if they're literally, if they have a separate entity in the US, as an LLC and it was called NLXY, and they've shuttered that. And I wonder if there's some legal protection and wrapper around that because there's no doubt this is going to be surrounded by, you know, legal action and get really messy for a long time from people who are rightly furious that a company can just overnight, you know, walk away. And so there's some context there that this is not a small company that's, you know, gone bust in a way, or that, the IPO didn't work or something and the money's run out. There is a lot of money in the kitty in the bank account of the parent company if they wanted to do the right thing. So to explain Gleb's rage and Tom's rage to our listeners, this is a company with the means to say that they could refund everybody who's bought a juice box in the history of time, and it would be a rounding error in their budget if they wanted to. So they've chosen not to. They've chosen to shut the doors, and I think that's I think the strategy was they're going to operate in countries where they have an energy retail business. And, you know, I understand that, because then they can align all of their businesses together in terms of energy retail. Your house is powered, that's your tariff at home. It's how you buy your electricity from, and your car charging. I understand all of that, but it was the walking away from the industry bit that I think has really surprised people and would wish for them to have done it, you know, done it differently. Now, Gleb, do you think that this does harm to your industry that you're passionate about, because you want to move electric mobility forward, and, you know, you've built this business not with cheap Chinese stuff, but you're manufacturing in North America, you're making big investments, and do you feel this inside you, in your heart, this is kind of a dagger to the industry?
It hurts a lot. So about United Chargers, we are a self-propelling company. We are bootstrapping the company. We have no investors. It's my money, which I accumulated over 20 years of consulting business, which went into the business, and my friend's money. And we are bootstrapping it. So we are very financially stable, let's say. And if we go out of business, all our chargers can be interoperable and connected to other services. And we already integrated with Epic and ChargeLab. So they can actually connect our chargers to their software anytime, right? So, but about Enel is, I have a history with Enel. We used to manufacture Enel chargers a long time ago with Val Miftachev and at eMotor Works. And then Enel decided not to continue the relationship, and unfortunately. So it hurts a lot knowing that they have money. It hurts a lot knowing that they, just like a child, as Tom said, I talked to my business partner, and I said, why they did this? And they said, they have too much money. They have too much money, and they just shut the door into everybody's face, saying, like, you have it now, you know? And that is the wrong attitude. And it takes them 5 seconds to fix it, to turn the service up and give, if they don't want, they can make some money out of it, but they have too much money, I guess. But they can find different ways of how to find a partner who will pay them over time this money, right? Or like maybe if they can't find somebody who can pay them right away, they can find they can even create a non-for-profit organization right now out of an LX and make this an open source code to everybody. And there is everything bad can turn into good. We can still turn it into good things if we communicate to Enel folks properly and tell them, like, don't do it, please don't do it. You are hurting the industry. You gonna have an evil name following you for years as anti-EV right now, because what you did is horrible. Don't do it. Turn it into a good thing. Okay, you don't care about money. Fine, you have money. We got it. Making the non-profit, turn it into non-profit, share it with everybody, kickstart the new movement, be the leader of the new movement. Don't just leave like that. We understand that you lost money. We understand you were not able to compete. You understand that you have issues, but we all do. It's business. Nobody is happily sitting out there. I have 2 million problems. I'm solving every minute, and you don't quit. Quitting is bad. You keep going.
Well said. All right, Gleb, thank you so much. It reminds me much of Fisker as well, and that I think they are trying perhaps to do the right thing. But again, that's a different example because the Fisker ran out of money. But in both cases, the customers have already been left in the lurch. And it's the everyday people that are paying the price. Gleb, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. We look forward to seeing Tom's video with you and Tom discussing this issue a little bit later on. We'll let you get on with your day and your 2 million problems you've got to solve. But we appreciate your time, Gleb. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, Gleb, well, thank you very much for joining us. As always, your passion, your expertise, your knowledge on the industry, you're welcome anytime on the podcast. We'll take a quick break for our audio listeners. And when we come back, we've got a bit more to say about this Juicebox NLX Way departure from the US. Tom, that video is coming up a little bit later. We can catch it on State of Charge.
Yeah, a little after the show. I just have to finish a couple small edits. I'll put it up probably within an hour of the end of the show. And I have Gleb on for 20 minutes right in the heart of it. And we covered some of the stuff that we went over yesterday, but he talks about some other stuff. Gleb seems legitimately concerned about the industry, which you don't get that often with individual business owners. You'd almost think that he, being the owner of a competing brand, would revel a little bit in this and say, good, another one bites the dust, more customers for me. But I can tell you honestly, when I spoke to Gleb the first time, when I called him after this, he was talking faster than I can understand. You know, he has that Russian accent, so, you know, he's not always 100% clear to me. And I'm like, Gleb, calm down. And he's like, this is not good. This is not good for the industry. We must make standardization, you know. And I'm like, well, you seem more upset than customers. You're a competitor. Why don't you put out like a special trade in your juice box by Grizzly and I'll give you $50 off or something. You could benefit from this. He's like, I'm not benefiting from other people's pain. This is bad for the industry. It's, you know, we have to correct this. We need to have, the OCPP so that anybody can just log in if a company goes out of business and reuse the equipment. Anyway, I have that video going up soon. And it's an interesting chat with Gleb. As you could tell, very colorful character, Gleb.
Yeah, and that's fantastic to have him on and so passionate. And what amazed me about this story, Tom, is when I woke up and I, you know, saw the news, my initial reaction was, I mean, you know, if you had your charger between 5 and 8 years, technology moves so quickly, I'd probably write it off. Like, I've had my charger 5 years. If it's out of warranty, if it stopped working now, I'd be irritated for 5 minutes and then have to try and find the money to buy a new one. If I bought one 5 minutes ago, or my energy company were like, no, here's our recommended partner. If you want to take part in some overnight trading or some, you know, peak power trading stuff, and here's the company that you need to buy it from. And I'd done that and spent $1,000, $2,000, whatever, redoing my electric wiring, you know, 5 days ago, I would be spewing right now. And then the other thing is the commercial stuff just doesn't
That's
work.
That's the real thing.
What? What the heck?
You just spent $500 on a home charger. How about the guy that spent $150,000 to put four NL DC fast chargers in his parking lot?
Wow.
Do we know what the scale of the DC charger infrastructure is that belong to NL?
I honestly don't know. They don't have like thousands of them installed in the US, but they have a footprint. You know, they're out there. And I had a couple people contact me. One person first thing in the morning was like, what do I do here? You know, we have these chargers. They don't work. You know, like, how do I get them turned back on? And, that's a
horrible, it's amazing.
What a horrible thing. And as you mentioned so eloquently, Martin, you know, the NL is such a huge company. It would be a rounding error for them to stay on for a couple of months, keep the servers functioning until the market figured out what was going on. Maybe a charge lab or somebody pays them some money, says, look, you know, give us the access, allow us to get all your customers back online. I'm sure customers wouldn't be happy, but they would pay a fee. The guy that's just invested $100,000 on DC charging equipment might not be happy if you say, look, you got to give us $10,000 to keep these things working, or you've got nothing. Of course, they're not going to be happy, but they'd probably do it. Excuse me.
Yeah. It's better than nothing.
My allergies are terrible.
It reminds me of so many examples over the year. The one that springs to mind of companies doing the right thing was when Honda pulled out of Formula One. And there's a million examples like this, but I'm a huge motorsport fan, so it resonates with me. And it's nicely different to EVs in that they sold to the management. And the management did a management buyout for £1. And even then, so rather than just shut the thing down, and Honda was spending hundreds of millions on Formula One and they couldn't win. And they sold it to a guy called Ross Brawn. And they ended up winning the championship next year. It's quite a famous fairy tale, but Honda not only said, well, you know, we'll sell you the company for £1, but Japanese culture wouldn't allow them just to walk away and screw everyone. So I think they funded the staff wages for either 6 months or a year or something. Like, they not only sold the company for £1, but also put a ton of money in and said, and we'll keep going because it's the right thing. You know, we could just lay everybody off and do minimum severance, but it's the right thing to do to at least give you the chance and we'll walk away. Cost them a ton of money. And then the company they sold it to, they went and won the championship the next year. And then Honda came back and had success with Red Bull. But the point is, NL have the option, if they want to do what we would call, again, a moral judgment. Be careful what I say, because they are such a big company. The right thing, it's moral judgment, the right thing to do. But of course, they are, I suppose, legally entitled, if the organization is set up that way, and like I said, about liability, to close the doors and be like, whoops, our US operation, and we shut the doors, and you can't come after us because we're in Italy, and it's that company shut down. So a shocking story this week.
I love Vlog's term rage quit.
Wow. So I didn't know, Dom, you have a juice box as well.
Yeah, I have a juice box at home. It's a really old unit. It doesn't work. The Wi-Fi, I couldn't get it to work anyway. I forget exactly what the reason was. It was a few years ago that I had my home wired up and had it plugged in, set up. But yeah, I could never get the Wi-Fi to working anyway. So it's not like a big loss to me, but I feel for the people out there who depend on that part, those features, and now cannot use them.
But it'll still work without the Wi-Fi, Dom. You meant it won't work as a smart charger.
Right.
It'll still charge a car. You know, like the two I have behind me, this is the old, over here is the old version, when it had the metal case, when eMotorworks started the company. And then when NL took over, they redesigned it and came out with the one on to my other side. But I used to recommend, it was always in my top five chargers every year. I stopped recommending them about 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, because so many of my customers were saying that they were having trouble with them, that the quality had gone down. They always had really good customer service. I'll give them that. And I actually knew the head of customer service over there, Chris Kluzak. They had good customer service, but the quality went down after NL took over. Mm-hmm. And then they kept redesigning the app. They always had a great app. And it was the first, you know, the juice box is the very first Wi-Fi connected smart charger ever. Very first one. Val Miftikoff, Gleb mentioned his name, started the company back in 2013. And he out of his like garage in California. And it was the first smart charger. And I was like, back then, I was like, oh my God, look at this. There's like an app to charge your car and I can control it. I can see how much energy. This is amazing. And I did a review for Inside EVs back in like 2014. But then he sold the company to NL in 2017. And with the money that he had, this is, side note, Val started Zero Avia, which is a hydrogen fuel cell powertrain for airplanes. Brilliant guy, Val. And they're killing it now. And this is back as soon as he sold the company, because I did some consulting for him way back in like 2016, 2017. As soon as he sold the company, he was like, Tom, let's have lunch. I want to talk to you about what I'm doing next. And we sat down at a bar and he's like drawing with a pencil on a napkin. He's like, I'm going to design a hydrogen powertrain for aviation. And I'm looking at him like, go ahead, knock yourself out, you know? And now it's like 5 years later and he's killing it. He's got contracts with like United Airlines, a whole bunch of big airlines. And hydrogen will work for aviation. The reason hydrogen works, the powertrains work, but the reason why I've always said we'll never get it for personal transportation vehicles is we'll never build out the infrastructure. to refuel the vehicles. The hydrogen powertrains, it works. And if we made them in mass and we produced the hydrogen in volume, it would drive down the price and it would be reasonable. Electric's better, but for airplanes, it works because you only have to put the refueling stations in at airports. And that's easy. So, you know, all the planes take off and land at the same place. So, he's doing pretty good with that. But I digress. That's the company history from Juice Box. It started out as eMotor Works, and unfortunately, it's dead.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Okay, this story's going to rumble on, and we'll no doubt come back to it. Dom, we can see that you're in the penthouse suite right now. You're on the road still. What's the latest with you? What's been going on? What can you tell us?
This lovely Hyatt here, and I'm in Omaha, Nebraska at the moment. But before I get into that, I just want to mention, so I got a call a few days ago. I'm not sure who said this or did this, but Hyundai Pierre got a hold of me and said, you know, you need to make a correction on a show. All Hyundai Ioniq 5s being built in Georgia right now, leaving the factory, are leaving the factory with NACS charge sockets, whatever. So the Georgia plant is not building any CCS on Ioniq 5s. So that's just a message that they gave me, and I'm sending that out to y'all. And that's about it.
That's probably my fault. Probably my fault, because I'd read that the 2025 model year Ioniq 5 will come with CCS1 to begin with, and then it'll go next. So I'm delighted.
Oh, yeah. That was wrong. Yeah, whoever told you that had it wrong, apparently.
Delighted to hear that if you buy a 2025 model year Ioniq 5, it's going to have native NACS. That is fantastic news.
Fantastic.
We look forward to the... it was called SEVEN in concept form, but it's going to be called the Ioniq 9, and the car, so that's going to be made in Georgia, isn't it? The Ioniq 5, and then after that, they'll make the 9. We've seen it this week, very quickly. I'll mention we saw it without much camo on. And so Hyundai have got this incredible run of form at the minute of releasing slightly wild concept cars, and the industry always dumbs them down and, you know, makes them more vanilla for cost, efficiency, compliance, regulation. And the South Koreans keep bringing concept cars that are, production series cars that are really similar. And again, the back end of the 9, which was called the 7 back in the day, looks incredibly like the concept. All that kind of black foam padding has now come off, and now it's just the black and white colorful stick-on camouflage they have. But you can make out, like, this is going to be almost the same, this big three-row. And obviously, we've got the Kia EV9 out there already, but we're looking forward to that. So that'll be the second vehicle coming out of that plant as well. And again, native NACS, which is awesome. Anyway, yes, tell us why you're on the road.
So I think I said Hyundai wrong. It's Hyundai, whatever, not whatever I said.
I don't know what you said.
I still struggle with that. Let's see. So last couple of weeks, last week I flew to Denver and went up to Fort Collins and then delivered a Kyle, who is our co-host today, but he's not on today. He's busy doing out of spec things I can't talk about. But I had to deliver his car to Seattle, Washington, because he organized this huge trip with nine electric vehicles and one ICE vehicle to drive from Seattle nonstop across the country to Boston, called the I-90 Surge. And there'll be videos coming out with this. I can't give any details about who won or anything like that yet. But this whole thing has given me a chance to drive some cool cars and see great parts of the country I've never seen. Like, for instance, Omaha, Nebraska. I had no idea. This is my first time here. This is a cool town. Like, this city, I'm in the old part of the city, I guess. There's like a good-sized core with brick streets and a lot of people walking and restaurants. It's like, oh, this is actually really kind of cool out here. Anyway, so yeah, we drove. We have I think Kyle's listed all this thing on his Twitter account or his X.com account, all the different cars. But we had I drove a Genesis G80 electrified. That was the car I was in. We also had the Ioniq 6 from Hyundai. Then we had a Porsche Taycan and a Lucid Air and a BMW i7, a Tesla Model 3 Refresh Highland. What am I missing? Cheddar Kung Pao was actually among us. He drove a car. I'm not exactly sure which one he was in now. I've kind of forget. And I think he's, so we're kind of returning these cars. So we did this trip all the way across to Boston. And yeah, he's in the Plaid. Okay. Well, I'm going to try to get to Fort Collins tonight. That's the plan, and get on a plane. So, right.
The biggest news is they let a BZ4X start in Pennsylvania, and it still came in last.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, we did have also a besides Kyle's Model S Plaid, we did have an OG Model S as well. So we can see how far this EVs have really come since like 2012, or I think it's 2012 we had, to today. And it's, the difference is, well, you'll see, is pretty huge. Yeah, so it was pretty incredible. Each car had three people, so it was like, this is a huge deal. That, man, so 30 people, 10 cars, just driving like nonstop across the country. There were no accidents. No one got a speeding ticket. There may have been a couple of warnings. I don't know. I didn't get any. But yeah, so I drove the G. I had a good chance to really get a good feel for the G80 electrified from Genesis, and you know, I gotta say, it's kind of mediocre. Like for the price tag, I can't see myself like. I kind of like the way it looks on the outside, and you get inside and it's got like a, you know, an affordable luxury kind of feel. Like maybe they play in the same market as the Cadillac Lyriq in some respects, but you know, it's just got some compromises due to it shares its platform with the gas powered G80. And so there's some compromises, like the back floor is like really high. So you're sitting in the back seats, which are kind of molded to your back, which feels kind of nice until you want to sleep in it. But that's not what most people do in their G80s. But yeah, the back seat is not great. The front seat is not bad. But the driver's seat, this one had massaging seats on the driver's side, which was great while it was working. But then when it wasn't working, you kind of feel like these big, hard things in the seat, sort of. A little bit, you know, so it's not quite, you know, there's like things about it that were so great, but then, you know, it had an 87.2 kilowatt hour battery. It didn't have the range of a lot of other ones though, you know, so it wasn't quite there with the efficiency, I guess. It did have all wheel drive when a lot of our competitors had rear wheel drive. Yeah. So that was, I think everyone in the car, when we watch the videos, we'll have a sum up with everybody giving their impressions of the different cars. And I think we all kind of had the same feel for like the price tag. It's a bit of a hard sell unless you really like the, you know, the exterior and, you know, you're cool with it. I think the interior is decent enough that, you know, you'd enjoy it, but it's not like, it's not for that price tag. But anyway, so on my way back, I am now in the BMW i7, which I have to say, man, oh man, I love this thing. It also shares its platform with the gas version, and there are compromises, but it's just such an incredible vehicle. You know, they're just here, just parked at a charger, and it's, so you can see it's huge. It's huge. This is rear wheel drive, so it's not the most powerful one, but man, if it's just, when you come onto the power, it just kind of rises. It's not, it does everything in a nice, calm sort of way, but still with lots of power. Like I'm reminded of the old Rolls Royce attitude with their horsepower ratings, when they say horsepower is adequate. And this is the case, I think, with this car, it's adequate. And so this thing is like amazing. It's a rear wheel drive. All the seats have massaging seats in it. You can configure the Bowers & Wilkins stereo to be kind of give every seat in the car its own sort of centered experience. The interior, everything looks really nice along the dash. It's just a lovely place to sit. And the ADAS system is just next level. I like it a lot better than Tesla's. So I'm driving on the highway, getting a massage, listen to some cumbia, corridos tumbados in over the stereo, get a massage, and then no hands on the steering wheel. It's like a hands-free. So usually I'm a very anti-hands-free sort of talking point. I'd like to, people I believe should keep their hands on the car, but this is really engineered to take your hands off the wheel. And so I'm doing it cautiously, because I'm not super comfortable with it, but so far it's like kind of amazing. Like it stays in the lane. And then if you're approaching a slower car, it'll say, check your mirror to make sure the lane is clear. So you do that and then it puts on the turn signal and changes lane for you. So I'm just sitting there getting a massage, listening to music, looking at my mirrors every once in a while, going down the highway. I don't know if there's a top speed where it's restricted to, but I did, for scientific purposes, check out, and it does work over 90 miles an hour, at least briefly, allegedly. And
wow. Yeah, it sounds like it's the real deal. Fantastic. What a nice way to head back to Fort Collins.
Right, yeah. It's just just such a great place, comfortable. Everything's just quality. So it makes up for it. It doesn't do some electric things super well, but it kind of makes up. It has a huge battery. It's like 105.7 kilowatt hours. And so it doesn't charge as fast as a lot of other ones. I think the fastest or the highest power peak I've seen was like 200 kilowatts. I thought I saw in the materials that it's supposed to charge at 250, but I haven't seen that. But yeah,
I don't think so. I think just a touch over two, Dom. I didn't think it was 250.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So I've seen just a touch over two is what I've seen basically. Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's like one of those cars that we never really talk about or even think about really. We talk more about the like Mercedes EQS, which has the same kind of starting price point, 105 or so thousand. But I think I would take this over the EQS. The EQS does electric things a little bit better. I feel like it's more efficient, but this thing just feels so good. Like I can't help it. I'm really looking forward to BMW making a 7 Series on like the Neue Klasse platform if they go with that direction. Because if it was just that stately and that luxurious, but with a dedicated EV platform, I think this thing would be just the bomb.
Yeah, but I think the key to it is for many people, they feel that Mercedes, the EQ branding is going. The next S-Class will just be the S-Class, but it'll be electric or it'll be combustion.
Right.
But I think the looks for many people in that segment, when they did the Mercedes EQS and the stubby nose and the styling that you would do, moving the cabin, forward and aft as well, all the things you can do with the platform. I think that all their research, some of their research said, look, people just want a traditional S-Class or BMW 7 Series experience. And so totally get why it looks the way it does, because, it looks like the combustion car. So mostly.
Yeah.
Surprised me, BMW did a fantastic job on their EVs that shared platforms with ICE, like the i7, the i4. When I first drove the i4, I was shocked at how impressed I was. I really thought it was going to feel like a compromised car. And you could tell there are some compromises, but they did a much better job than I expected with both of those vehicles. Really haven't driven the i5 much, but the i4 and the i7, I thought BMW nailed it as good as they could with a shared platform without using a dedicated platform.
Yeah. Some of the navigation or routing things, it's like finding chargers, it's a bit sketchy. I've had to use like PlugShare or a better route planner to kind of make up for its deficiencies. But other than that, you can make it work if you need to. I don't think most i7 owners are driving across the country like this. But for most people, it's fine, especially you leave the hotel or leave your home with a close to full charge. You can go for hours and hours driving before you need to stop again. So.
Before we get too many complaints about us talking about $100,000 vehicles, let's change the topic and come back to everyday reality. For our older year listeners, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back in a second. All right, it's that time of the show when we head to Chevy Equinox Corner, as we try to do every week these days, just to keep Tom happy. And a story that we had in the running order, I'll just quickly mention it, by the way, and we can always discuss that as well, is the Chevy Equinox EV1 LT is now on sale for $34,995. I believe that includes shipping. I think that's the full price, under 35. I can be corrected. But either way, this new economical option is eligible for the full $7,500 federal tax credit. Effective price, $27,495. And so that's potentially less expensive than the fossil-burning Chevrolet Equinox. And while the final price is probably a little bit higher than perhaps all the flashy announcements were all those years ago about what it'll start at. That is still, you know, time changes and prices go up. That's an incredible price for an EPA estimated range of 319 miles, I think. And so people can say, yeah, but, you know, for late 20s, you could get a decent nearly new Model 3. And that's true. You could get, I've seen Mercedes-Benz EQBs under 30 now. Get a used one of those. And that's true. Fabulous vehicles. But for a brand new electric car, an 85 kilowatt hour battery, 320 miles of EPA, that won't charge as quick as, you know, maybe others. Tom can tell us why. And I'm sure that if you don't know, Tom's happy to quickly explain why 150 kilowatts doesn't mean 150 kilowatts in an Equinox and the Ultium modules, the way they've done it. But either way, extraordinary value, brilliant. And that just means, yeah, that's a great headline price. But by the time, you know, 90% of people are applying some sort of finance to a new vehicle purchase, by the time that you put that into a monthly cost of some form of, you know, a loan, a lease or whatever, that's going to be, oh, such a sweet deal. So that is the base trim. Tom, you also put out your video about the Equinox EV 2LT and the 2RS. And your headline on that was, what's the difference? So yeah, if you can fill us in on what is the difference of these two different trims of this car.
Okay, well, first, let me tell you why I did this. When I first got the Equinox, I put out, you know, some tweets saying, hey, I got an Equinox. What do you guys want to hear? So, and I've been, what do you want to see? So, and I've been following some of the comments and I had quite a few people say, Tom, I'm all in on the Equinox, but I don't know if I should get an LT or an RS. Sure. I could look up like the line items on the website, you know, what the differences are, but maybe could you get two of them next to each other and just show us so we could look and see what the differences are. It's mostly cosmetic. There's not a very big difference at all in the LT trims and the RS trims. Well, this is for 2024. I had to put 2024 in there because for 2025, and now with the new price that you're talking about, Chevrolet is changing the trim levels. Instead of having 1LT, 2LT, 3LT, 2RS, 3RS, which has always bothered me and always been confusing that they have too many different levels, just order, have base vehicle and let people buy the options they want. You know, if they want a different spoiler that's in a package or whatever. But anyway, I digress. In 2025 now, there's just two versions, LT, RS. There's not 1LT, 2LT, 3LT, you know. So the new price that you just mentioned, Dom, was for the 2025 LT, which is the base model. The RS is going to have more options. So this video that I put out is already old because the new, the LT versus the RS now is different. But I made that, I explained that in the video. There's still enough 24s on the lots for people to want to decide which one to get. So I went over feature to feature, mostly cosmetic, tires and wheels, front spoilers, badging, blackout trim, the stitching on the interior, you know, some small cosmetic things, but same battery, same charging, you know, same options pretty much, you know, and that's why I did the video to just let people know, here's what you get for the $1,500 difference between a 2024 2LT and 2024 2RS Equinox. I like it. I think it looks nice. The only thing that I kind of, I didn't complain about, but I said it's a little, over the top was the 2RS has these massive wheels and tires, 21-inch tires with really wide wheels like what you would expect on a sports car. They look nice, but the Equinox is not a sports car. Even the all-wheel drive version isn't particularly quick. The front-wheel drive version that I have is borderline slow. You know, it's fine compared to combustion Equinox or combustion vehicles. But if you're just used to driving EVs like I am, though it's all I've drive now, you know, you don't get that neck snapping torque when you step on it. It's just kind of like, and you move along. You know, it's got enough power to get you on the highway to pass people and everything. But the front wheel drive version has, I think, 213 horsepower. So it's, you know, we're talking about, you know, those, when you see horsepower in the 200s, it's like, That's what you're used to seeing with combustion vehicles. We're used to seeing every vehicle 0 to 60 in under 6 seconds. And this takes about 8 seconds to go 0 to 60. So having these big wide tires on it is like, come on. Like, you know, it's you're cutting into my range for just to have that look. But other than that, I like what Chevy did with the RS trim looks-wise. Different front spoiler, different like a grill on the front where it's like a diamond shape. So they made some nice touches, and I like how the interior has two different color stitching in the seats. And it just gives it a little bit, it upscales a little bit. It feels a little bit more premium than the LT does. So for me, it was worth it. But throw all that out the window when you're going for the 25s, because now it's totally different trim.
Excellent. All right. Dom, any more questions before we move on to the Iona stuff this week?
Not really. Just to say, speaking of if the Equinox is too low on power for you, just hang on, because we just learned this week that the Chevy Blazer SS trim will be out in the first part of the year in 2025. And it's got, I forget what the exact horsepower numbers are, but I do remember it's like 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds, which is like close to Tesla Model Y performance. I think a bigger package in the Blazer. I feel like the Blazer is more roomy inside than the Model Y. But anyway, it's like another option in that sort of class. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that, really.
And I will say the 2025 Equinox is getting a little bit more power, both the two-wheel drive and the front-wheel drive version. So it's going to have a little bit more juice than what mine has. But overall, I'm very happy with it. I'm glad I got it. My wife really likes driving it. So I would recommend the Equinox for sure.
Right.
Excellent. All right. Well, I don't know if you want to get a picture of the Iona announcement ready this week. Oh, wow. Urban, thank you so much. Let's have a look at this.
Right. He asks, what do you think about a Fiat 500e as a city runabout? Here in Slovenia, it's 10,000 off the MSRP, 42 kilowatt hour version. So I don't know the whole market in Slovenia. So I like the car. It's cute. I'm not sure about the range. I guess shop it against the MG4 over there or the Dacia Spring, I guess. I think I'd rather have the Fiat than the Dacia Spring, but I'm not sure what the price comparison is there.
I think quite substantial, I think, but it's a very premium small EV built on a proper EV platform. That's the thing. So it looks identical to every other Fiat 500, and for good reason. That's what the car looks like. But this, under the skin, is a proper EV. Loads of style, a premium small EV, a bit like the Mini Cooper SE or the old Honda-E, rest in peace. And you'll pay a little more for that, but it is a great vehicle. Check out the La Prima trim, which is really special, really nice. And I mean, heck, even get a soft top, one of those for the sunny days in Slovenia, and you'll be off to the races. So thank you for your contribution.
500E. A lot of fun to drive.
So cool. Now, Iona is a new charging network. It is BMW, General Motors, Honda, Hyundai, Mercedes-Benz, Kia, Stellantis, and Toyota have joined as well. And they have broken ground on its first rechargery. And that's the word that they used, rechargery. Now, this is an old gas filling station at Apex, North Carolina. And it is a short skip and a hop from their Iona headquarters in Durham, North Carolina. And I think that's going to be not the biggest site in the world. It's going to feature 10 charging bays with CCS and NACS ports, delivering each unit can deliver up to 400 kilowatts of power. I didn't see in the announcement, so if anybody knows in the comments, let us know if you're watching the live stream what technology that they are putting in, whether they've committed to the same technology at all their sites. But the key thing about it was it's their vision for what a lounge would look like. And we've seen this with the Audi lounges in Germany. Over here we have GridServe. And it's so nice when you've got somewhere like this. And there is a bit of an anomaly in this thinking, in that we're working really hard to have chargers that will, you know, get you enough range in 10, 12, 15 minutes and be on your way. And yet also creating these wonderful spaces that you want to spend 30, 45 minutes inside, bathrooms, coffee service, food, beverage options, decent Wi-Fi, pet friendly, all that kind of stuff. And in, you know, this is their vision in a symbolic historic location of what charging hubs can look like. And honestly, I will happily pay a little bit more for this kind of experience when I'm with my family. If I'm on my own and I just want to quickly stop and I just need like a bathroom break, then you don't stop for too long. The times when I've used GridServe over here, which have a lot of the lounges and things like that, I always charge way more than I need. And so is that a good or a bad thing? I think they're mostly 30, 40 stalls big, but it is surprisingly difficult by the time you've plugged in and then walked maybe 2-3 minutes to get into the facility, use the bathroom, and then grab a coffee. Often there's you know, somewhere to sit, free Wi-Fi, plug your laptop in if you want to do a bit of work or whatever. But by the time you grab a snack and get back to your car, you'd be surprised how long that takes. And so I've spent quite a long time in places like this, and I always overcharge. And I'm clock watching, thinking, well, I can be leaving 5 minutes ago, but I'm drinking a nice coffee in a nice environment. Rivian have got a really great example of this at the head of the trail. Is it Yosemite? Am I thinking about that one? On their Rivian Adventure Network, and you know, you can make your own trail mix, and they've got this really cool building. And I just love that they're doing more stuff like this. This isn't going to be every Ionos site, but I really love how they've styled this one out. What are your guys' thoughts, Tom?
So the interesting that you ended with you like how they're styled. They didn't design this. If you look at the property now, it's an abandoned gas station, and there's pictures of it online. It looks exactly like this now. It's just old and shabby and kind of like falling apart. So I think this wasn't like let's get a piece of property and build a site out like as we envision our future sites to all look like. I think this was just an opportunity. There was like an abandoned gas station on a piece of property that nobody wanted. And Iona was like, well, this is close to our headquarters. So why don't we use this as like an example site, or just so we have a site really close to our headquarters. So like when, you know, we have guests come, we could drive over and show them one of our sites. So yeah, we'll convert this site because there's a lot of things about it that aren't great. It's not right on a major thoroughfare, number one. Number two, it's a small site. It only has 5 chargers. So, you know, that's already something that I would say, geez, like red flags, like 5 chargers. Like Ionos supposed to have learned from the mistakes of the other companies. And like, you know, when, you know, we know in today's market, I would say 10 has to be the minimum that you can use. Now, yes, these chargers can power share. And they're 400 kilowatt chargers. So you can have 2 cars charging at 200 kilowatts. So I get that. Still, it should have more locations, in my opinion. And Gary Clark, one of our followers, sent me an email yesterday with, he did a little research and found like the whole layout, the preliminary plans that were submitted to the town, and even the charging equipment. They are going to be Alpatronic 400 kilowatt units. So that was a question that we had for a long time. What would Iona be using? You know, let's hope that they use good equipment. I'm pretty confident with the Alpatronics are going to be good units. So and Adam just posted permits confirmed they're using the 400 kilowatt Alpatronic units. So that looks like that, you know, I wouldn't think that Iona would be using 5 different suppliers like Electrify America did and then had problems because of that, with that they had too many suppliers. They kind of had to at the time, Electrify America, because there weren't companies out there that could scale like they needed. But now there are. We're coming in years after Electrify America. Companies like Alpatronic, if they have you know, multiple factories, at least one just here in the U.S., if they put in an order, if Iona said, you know what, we need 10,000 of these things in the next 3 years, you know, Alpatronic would just, you know, start building them, you know, and then maybe even open up another factory if they couldn't make them quick enough. So it's good to see that they're using equipment that I think is going to be of higher quality than what we currently have out here. But this site isn't, like I said, in my opinion, I think this was just an opportunity that, hey, yeah, we could make this work here. I don't think this is the model for what we're going to see replicated. And if it is, then Ayanna looked at an old abandoned gas station and said, that's what we want, you know, which I don't think is going to be the case. But it's going to have coffee, food, other beverages, restrooms, Wi-Fi. It's pet friendly. So, you know, you could walk around with your pet outside. So all the things we want to see, I just want to see this maybe closer to a highway and on steroids with 2 or 3 times the amount of charging stalls, because that's going to be needed on the highway locations. That's probably why they did this and said, okay, we can get away with just 10 stalls. This isn't a major highway location where thousands of cars drive by every hour.
Yeah. Someone's saying it's like Nathan Green has said, it's a proof of concept, basically. So it's not. It's like just like a model story. This is what we can do. And yeah, it looks fine, but it's going to need more charges, I think, especially if they want to use the people coming through to support sales at a business inside, or, you know, to help keep the lights on.
Completely agree. I noticed that this is the Rivian one I was talking about. This is called an output, a Rivian outpost, and this is a Yosemite.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, make your own trail mix, grab a coffee. You know, you can see obviously they're playing up the family angle here, and it leans into Rivian's adventure branding, which is really smart. And I absolutely love stuff like this for when you want to make charging part of your journey, and when you don't, as Tom says, you just want to rock up to a station that's 40 or 50 charges big, not queue, and crack on and be on your way. And there's just the two different ways of doing it. And, you know, I do have some sympathy to that view that you want every station to be like Tesla do it. Like, when was the last time Tesla put 5 charges into a location? Like, ever in the last 5 years? I mean, if they have, then remind me of it. But I've never seen be like, hey, so there's a new Tesla supercharged location with five superchargers. You're like, it's not how it works.
Yes. So go ahead.
No, to be fair, Martin, with these 400 kilowatt units that can split power, it kind of is 10 because, you know, you can still get 200 kilowatt. You know, well, depends
on a lot of people.
Yeah. And it also depends on the pack voltage and everything. So, but we're saying 5, but it will split power and they're high powered. So maybe, you know, 2 vehicles pull up that can pull a lot of power. You're not going to get full power, but, you know, it still is 10 stalls. You know, I'm a little harsh on them with that, but I was fully expecting out of the gate, you know, for them to say, look, one of the things we realized that Electrify America and EVgo did wrong was they don't have enough chargers on each location. And I know somebody commented that, well, they can always scale up. I heard that from Electrify America. I asked them from the very beginning, what happens as adoption picks up? Are you going to scale the site? So, oh yeah, we've designed the site. So when we see the full capacity, we could drop a couple more chargers in. That's not happening. You know, there's sites here in New Jersey that are always filled, and not one site in my area have I ever seen Electrify America add a charger, even the ones that are completely filled most of the day. So, you know, they're designed to be scalable, but coming in now in 2025, Ayanna needs to understand, you know, we need a bunch of stalls. You know, 10 is the minimum. Stalls that they should have. So anyway,
After driving across the country this week and charging on CCS pretty much exclusively, like a lot of places like across Wyoming, Montana, you know, maybe 4 stalls is okay there, but in the, you know, we get into the more urban, more densely populated parts of the country, some of those chargers were kind of, they're busy. There's like people rolling up in all kinds of EVs. It's kind of cool to see actually, but definitely need more than 4 stalls locations now. Man,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It is cool to see, Dom. But, you know, when I do my charge recordings now, I have to go out and start my charge recordings after I do dinner, after I eat dinner. Like, there's no way I can go during the day. So I have to, you know, now I'm charging late at night all the time when I do my charge recordings because the sites are just too filled. Here, but I'm not Middle America. You know, the coasts are different than, you know, the whole 80% of the middle of the country, you could probably get away with less chargers.
For now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they need to be future proof. If you know, that's why America can't build out their infrastructure. Other people like Ayana will step in and maybe take over their business. I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to move this along because we've got 20 minutes left of the podcast today. I'd like to do at least a good 10 minutes on two more topics, and that is GM having a great Q3 and Ford giving, or rather, I say giving is doing them a disservice, adding into the purchase price of a new vehicle some of the best hardware that's out there. So we do have a few bits and bobs have been happening this week. Volvo global sales were up 10%, but their EV sales were up 12%, I think it was, driven by the EX30, which has now done 100,000 sales, which is fantastic. And Ford had a pretty decent quarter as well. I'll get onto that in a moment. Tesla got rid of their cheapest car on the market, the Model 3. Loads of headlines this week about Tesla get rid of their cheapest car. It really wasn't, because it was the old rear-wheel drive Model 3, which wasn't tax credit eligible, along with the 100% tax on EVs that the US introduced. They introduced a 25% tax on Chinese batteries, and that had the LFP pack in, which was, I mean, rock solid, by the way. Great pack in an EV. Charge it to 100%. You know, it's not totally bulletproof, but they want to be charged to 100%. If not every day, then, you know, at least regularly. And that is to sort of balance the BMS and they're very, very robust batteries, but it would have just meant it's too expensive to sell. And so they got rid of that. And so the car that was $42,490, which was the long range rear wheel drive, I think it was, maybe it's all wheel drive possibly, became the cheapest car. But again, that's $7,500. Tax credit eligible. Most people are going to, that's going to apply to, unless you're a very high earner. We heard the news this week, $2 billion has been used this year so far in 2024 on the federal tax credit. And so that is now the cheapest Tesla Model 3, which is, you know, makes sense. It's a much better car, over 300 miles of range. And I think that was all the big news. Should I move on to the two big topics I want to get to?
Sure.
Okay, right. Let's get on to GM. Had a brilliant Q3. They were teeing up the numbers, I must admit, because they had given some of the preliminary numbers to CNBC, Inside EVs. I think had a report 2 weeks ago saying we think we're on for a good Q3, but I think that was GM working with publications saying, hey, look, we're going to be doing all right here. But, you know, for a long time on my podcast, EV News Daily, and here as well, we've given GM, I think, a reasonably hard time. You know, Tom has voted with his money and bought the vehicles. But we've certainly not been afraid to say, you know, you're not leading the way. The press releases, you know, you go back to 2021, and it was at the GM Factory Zero announcement on November 17th, 2021, when President Biden made that famous, you know, you did it, Mary, you electrified the entire automobile industry. And that wasn't, it's not her fault, the CEO, Mary Barra, that the president said that about it. But it was, you know, laughable and ridiculous, because GM certainly hadn't in 2021, and arguably had relied on the Bolt for their numbers until they couldn't anymore. And Ultium stumbled for a variety of reasons, mainly automation and battery module automation. They had to do a lot of manual assembly as a stopgap measure. And we think that's all behind, because Q3 had a really, really good Q3 for General Motors, up 60% year on year, 32,195 units sold in the third quarter of the year. And that leapfrogs them above Ford in terms of the battle of best of the rest behind Tesla. So notable gains from a 7.1 share to a 9.5 share of the US EV market. Whereas Ford also had a good time as well, but wasn't up enough to lose their number two spot to GM. How have they done it? We think that the answer is just to have a diverse amount of products on the market. When you think about their portfolio approach, so Tesla have two cars basically, and maybe a Cybertruck. S and X is a topic for next week's podcast. The numbers this week showed that no one's buying S's and X's because the Cybertruck had a recall, and the Cybertruck numbers are within S and X, and so you can subtract them and they go, oh, no one's buying S and X's. And so that company is just, you know, two cars. Ford is a truck and a car and an e-Transit. GM's gone portfolio approach, and all those had a good a number to them. Chevy Equinox, 9,772. A Blazer was 7,998, which is shy of 8,000. But also Hummer. Who's got Hummer money? But 4,500 people did in the quarter. Nice. The Sierra EV, the BrightDrop vans, they added a bit as well. We got vehicles coming. Even this quarter, I think there's a new Silverado trim coming this quarter as well. We've got new vehicles arriving. So finally, it looks like it's sorted. Dom, chip in, please.
Sorry. I was thinking that I believe the Cadillac Lyriq doubled its sales year over year from last year. I'm not sure. I was looking for the actual number here, but I'm not sure. So whoever made these notes last night did a terrible job.
Who did send these notes? But you know, upcoming models, the Cadillac Optiq, the Escalade IQ, they both get delivered in Q4. They'll both chip in. So there wasn't one. I mean, you know, the Equinox is the standout, as the Bolt used to be. The Bolt sold a ton. There's loads of Bolt in stock, by the way. You know, so the Bolt chipped in. All these nameplates clicking in good numbers, and they've gone for a portfolio approach. But my goodness, did they finally need to do it right? I think I've laid the table pretty well for enough for you guys to chip in. So Dom, what do you think of the results? I think it's probably too soon to say all of their problems are in the rearview mirror, but it was a good, they, you know, GM deserves to celebrate this week, and maybe they haven't electrified the entire automobile industry yet, but it was a good quarter.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I was really bullish on GM approach, using the, like, a common platform for all these different brands to keep the cost down and take advantage of scale. But then the execution kind of stumbled and fumbled, and battery issues and recalls and slow sales at the beginning. You know, the Lyriq came out, it's like slow selling. But you know, I think they're really starting to get, we need an electric Buick is what we need, but there is starting to get a lot
China's
of product.
China's got electric, right? Buicks, but you're not getting China, you know, electric Buicks.
Right. So yeah, we're really starting to see a lot of product coming out. And I was talking about the Cadillac Lyriq earlier, and I think it was like one of the highest selling Cadillacs, if not the highest selling. I can't quite find the
second, highest Caddy, the second.
Oh, okay. Which is great. And that's amazing.
Amazing.
I talked to a lady yesterday, you know, across the river in Iowa, and she had this nice red Cadillac Lyriq, and she was loving her car. And it was just really great to see that. I mean, that's this normal, you know, heartland of America lady, had been a Cadillac customer before, buys with the same kind of dealership over multiple vehicles, and just having a great experience with the car. And I think that will drive, you know, just future sales of, at GM. And, you know, if the Cadillac can keep on with this kind of success, I mean, the other OEMs are going to have a hard time, like the Fords and the Stellantis are going to have a hard time catching up with GM. It feels like at this point.
I should mention the Chevy Bolt comes back next year as well, second generation, or third, if you want to call it that. But the new Ultium generation Chevy Bolt, made on the old Malibu lines that have been shut down now, they're being retooled, and you know, other factors at play, like GM seem to finally be getting to grips with the bit of the business called GM Energy, with, you know, EVgo. We're seeing more from them as well. So all of this clearly has been worked on in the background for years. It doesn't mean that we weren't right to give them a hard time, because my goodness me, there was a lot of boastful press releases that we had to contend with in the inbox, and, you know, a lot of CNBC interviews with the CEO saying, oh, absolutely, we're going to be number one, you know, going to beat Tesla by
2025. Right?
That was it, Tom. Yeah. That was it. Yeah. It was, and, you know, so yes, we are going back a long time now, but that was in 2021. That was, I think it was October 2021, just before the Biden thing really blew up. But that was a CNBC interview in October 21, where she said, we will absolutely, I mean, there wasn't any doubt, we will absolutely, it was her word, absolutely catch Tesla in 2025. She said, and I quote, I am very comfortable, because when people get into these vehicles, they are just wowed. So we will be rolling them out, and we will be, and we're going to keep working until we have number one market share in EVs, end quote. I mean, again, it's why we all went, what? Like, okay, you're too busy doing deals with Nikola to make a Badger to realize what planet did you just land on? But
well, this is what she was talking about. you know.
And this is why we gave them a hard time.
Yeah, because the Ultium, you know, let's face it, we know they had problems developing Ultium and getting building it in scale, you know. And so now that it seems like those issues are behind them and they're starting to build the vehicles in scale, we're seeing they're pretty good vehicles and people are buying them. So, you know, maybe if she expected us to be where we are today a year and a half ago, I still don't think it would have been possible for them to even come close to catching Tesla. But they certainly would be, much farther down the road if they didn't have the Ultium delays that we saw in the beginning. Because now that people are getting in the cars, they're buying them. And I'm impressed with Equinox. You know, I mean, other than its poor charging performance, which, you know, I admit here many times, sometimes I dwell on that more than I need to. Many people are going to have an Equinox. It's got 300 miles of range. If they can charge at home, they might use a DC fast charger two or three times a year. And to them, they don't really care if it takes them 45 minutes to charge to 80% when they're stopping or 35 minutes. It's really, or even 30 minutes. The extra 15 minutes, you know, just means a few more sips of coffee. So that's really its biggest flaw, in my opinion. And if that's the biggest flaw, it's a pretty darn good vehicle. So, absolutely. You know, now that people are getting in them, we're seeing they're buying them.
Nebula says GM sold more Equinoxes than Model 3s this quarter. I think we get that data. Wow. If not the sales data, we certainly get because I think they have to publish the federal incentive data, which I've not seen recently, but I think you do get some pretty decent numbers out of Canada and breaking down models and stuff, at least the people have used the any kind of federal incentives for. In Canada, going really well. I think a portfolio approach is finally the right way to do it in terms of to get that big number and provides strength in depth. You know, they've got loads of players on the bench, and if one has a tough time, you can, you know, hopefully another one can step up and do pretty well. So we're looking forward to the Bolt coming back. And, you know, if the Equinox is an effective $27,000 vehicle, and looking forward to when the Bolt arrives, what's that going to be on sale for? So loads of reasons to, you know, to finally give GM a break.
23 would be great, right? 23,000?
I think it's
25.
Yeah, I would imagine that you're gonna pay just under 30 for a Bolt EV. I don't think they're gonna be able to sell it for less than that with the Ultium platform. So with the tax incentive, you know, I'm sure you'll be able to push it up into the 30s too. You know, but a base one is probably one's probably gonna be around I would think, you know, $28.99, $29.99, and with the federal incentive, you're looking at the low 20s, and with the many state incentives. You know, it'll be down below $20,000. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what size battery they put in it. You know, how many of the Ultium modules they are used, you know, what's their range target. I would guess it would be close to where the Bolt was now. You know, I think it's going to be around 260, 275. I don't think it's going to have, the range say that the Equinox has. I think, you know, GM's going to probably make sure that there's a distinction, you know, between Bolt and Equinox besides size. I think in range, they're going to make sure it has a little bit less. That would be my guess, but we'll see.
Well, it's a great bit of news this week. I think it was the sort of the Ultium tech getting sorted in the background. And like I say, I remember the CEO, Mary Barra, talking about an unnamed automation supplier who let them down. And then GM realized that, like, this whole world that they're, you know, that all the car makers are coming into now, of the ones that are getting involved in cell production, at least, it's like a house of cards. And they were let down in, you know, it was a major cause of the delays, if not all of it, in that just one piece of the chain went wrong and they had to get around it and, you know, do a lot of manual stuff for a period of time. So that's great news. I want to make sure we leave enough time at the end for another massive piece of news this week. And that was, I'll let Tom take this one away, Ford saying, right, for the last 3 months of the year, we're going to call it the Ford Power Promise. You buy lease one of our vehicles new. So you're looking at Lightnings and Mustang Mach-Es, and I think also the E-Trans as well. We are going to sort you out with home charging. Brilliant, but not just any old cheap knockoff that we found in the back of the warehouse. What you see sitting behind Tom right there over his shoulder. It's bi-directional. It's got like an MSRP of about $1,300, and they'll install it as well. There are some, I'll quickly lay the table here and let Tom take it away. There are some caveats. It's got to be attached to your house, and you can't be in an outbuilding, you know, miles away. They won't do trenching, and you can't have any upgrades required to your service either, or your, you know, your home panel, things like that. That's an 80 amp charger, but it's a 60 amp connection that they'll do. Now, they've also not put a dollar amount on it, as Kyle told us a little while ago, that he, when he bought his Tesla Cybertruck, it came with a dollar amount credit to have his charger fitted. And what a surprise. His installer was like, well, we can do all of this work. And, you know, why would they go below the voucher credit number? I mean, if I was running a business, I'd be like, hey, we can upgrade this, upgrade that, because Tesla are paying. So Ford haven't put a dollar amount on it, but they've got some, I just think, really sensible. They're not taking the mic, just some sensible things in there that they'll, but also install it on a 60 amp connection. But I'm sure that if you say to the installer, hey, I'd also like this, it's an 80 amp charger, I've been thinking about a 100 amp circuit, I'll pay for the upgrade. And that is, it's not just that for me, it wasn't just the dollar amount. It wasn't just the fact that Ford are thinking about how you charge the vehicle. It was because, you know, ultimately it's not, they could just give you $2,000 off a vehicle. And that is also a nice thing. What struck me is it just shows that Ford are thinking about how people use EVs, and it delighted me and it warmed my heart. And I was like, can all the car manufacturers please do something like this, which was to say, you know, and they'll hook you up with an installer. They'll all hook you up with a piece of hardware. But Ford were like, no, we'll take this on the chin and we'll sort it and we'll put home charging in for you. Have I got that right, Tom? That was a brilliant piece of news this week.
You said it all. We can move on.
Great. Okay.
So Tom has whole video on this too. I want to mention real quick, whole video. So if you want to dive deep into it, go to State of Charge and check that out. But Tom, sorry to interrupt.
No, not at all. So yeah, and you could tell I was enthusiastic in my videos. You know, I can't hide my enthusiasm sometimes when I think the OEMs do things correctly. And you guys know I've been railing on the no free charging for a long time as an incentive, as a purchase. Many of the OEMs offer free charging programs on public chargers, 3 years, unlimited free charging, 2 years, 2000 kilowatt hours and so forth. And what's bothered me about that is, in my opinion, it's so counterproductive, because we're incentivizing people to have a bad experience with their electric vehicle. Because public charging, no matter how you put it, is not as good of an experience as home charging. If you can, let's put this to the side for a second. As long as you can install home charging, it's so easy to charge at home. It almost always is less expensive. It's so convenient. One of the first things I noticed when I got my EV back in 2009, my first electric vehicle, and at the time I had no idea if I'd even like electric vehicles. I thought I might, tell BMW to take this thing back in a month. It's terrible. I don't want it, but one of the things that surprised me was I thought it was going to be a pain to charge. I'm going to plug in this thing every time. And, what a pain in the ass this is. It's so easy to get gas just once a week. I drive and fill up and then I'm done for a week. But then I quickly realized it was so good to charge at home, because I go there every day. I don't have to go out of my way. I'm not wasting my time. I get out of my car. I used to tell people that, say, well, how long does it take to charge? And I'd say about 7 seconds. And they'd look at me like Chris. I'm like, well, that's all it takes for me to walk to the charger, grab the connector and plug it in. Because then I go inside and I eat, I watch some TV, I go to sleep. And when I wake up, it's magically, I have a full tank again. So, that's what we should be incentivizing. So it drove me nuts that the OEMs kept incentivizing DC fast charging. And then there was the other problem of, because we're incentivizing it, everybody used it. So now the DC fast chargers were all being filled by people that didn't need to use them. Again, not a middle America problem. Coasts, this was a problem. And I interviewed dozens of people, maybe 100 or two. When I'm charging at a DC fast charger, I'll talk to the other people. I usually have to help them with something. And I'll ask them, do you live nearby? Where are you on a road trip? And at least 66% of the people that I talk to locally live close by, can charge at home, but they're there because they got a free charging period program. And if you got it, go ahead and use it. I'm not telling people not to use it. It's part of your deal. You have every right to use it. What I'm doing is telling the companies to stop doing this because it is counterproductive for a number of reasons. Okay, so getting back to the Ford deal, this is what the company should be doing, incentivizing home charging. And what Ford's doing is giving all new BEV purchases, Lightning, Mach-E, E-Transit, the Charge Station Pro behind me, which is an 80-amp charger. They'll install it on up to a – the program details are allows the installer to install it up to a 60-amp circuit, which would deliver 48 amps to your car. You could charge it like 11.5 kilowatts and up to 80 feet of a run from your service panel to the charger. It does not include a service upgrade. If your home needs requires a service upgrade, you'd have to pay for that. And the charger has to be installed in the structure where your meter and your service panel is. So if you have a detached garage and you wanted to install the charger in there, the extra cost of trenching would be on you. But the interesting thing is, as long as you meet that criteria, you're covered. The installer can't say, well, this was a difficult installation because I had to run the cable from your basement crawl space up to your attic, down, back, through a wall. We had to do this and do this because that's in some installations that I've seen are ridiculously difficult. And the contractor has to charge more for that because it's more man hours. As long as you put it on a 60 amp circuit, you're in the same structure as your panel and the run is less than 80 feet, it doesn't matter what the cost is, it's 100% covered by Ford. They didn't put a dollar cap on it where one installer can say, well, you know, I get $200 an hour labor, the next installer gets $150 an hour labor. So, you know, you're paying $500 on top of the installation, which is what happened when GM made the same deal. They didn't give the charger away, they paid for the installation, but they set the cap on like $1,200 or $1,800, I forget what it was. And a lot of people were getting banged on top of that, you know, with, well, your installation is $2,100, so you owe $400. Ford worked out a deal with QMerit, who's doing the installation, that said, you know, we're paying 100% of it, which is smart because the QMerit network, they'd be much less likely, the individual contractors, to push extra expenses onto, say, a Ford. Because Ford will fight back and say, no, we're not paying for that. Look at this run and everything. Whereas a homeowner is kind of like, well, they said it's $400 more, so I guess I have to pay that. You know, I want it installed. They're paying 75% of it. So I think it was smart that Ford, you know, went to QMerit and said, look, this is going to be the parameters. They probably made a deal where they said, we're going to give you X amount of dollars per installation, $1,500, whatever it is. That's it. You guys figure out how to make money on top of that, but we're going to be giving you thousands of installations. So you're going to make a little bit more on one. You're going to make a little bit less on the other, but overall you're going to make money. That's a total guess on my part, but I believe that would have been the smart way for Ford to do it. And why did Ford give the Charge Station Pro? Why didn't they give their 48 amp Ford connected charger? Because Ford wants you future-proofed. Because this charger can be an 80 amp charger. It's a bi-directional charger. So down the road, your next Ford vehicle that has bi-directional charging capability, you already have half the system installed. So it was smart on Ford to do that. Because I asked him, I talked to him, I said, well, why didn't you give the customer the option of either Charge Station Pro or the 48 amp? Or why didn't you just give the 48 amp if that's all you're covering? And they said, look, we wanted to make it really simple. We wanted to be able to streamline, you know, purchasing these to just purchase a ton of them. So it was either one or the other. And it just made all the sense in the world to give them the one that's better. And this is a better unit than the 48 amp, you know, Ford connected charge station. So I love it. I thought it was a fantastic program. I think it is. The only thing is I've gotten so many emails from followers that are like, Tom, 10 days ago, I took delivery of a Lightning Flash, you know, like, how do I get that? Like, how do I retroact this? Sorry, you don't. It is the day that the program was announced. This always happens. How about Tesla's the king of this? You know, people take delivery of a Model Y 2 days later, the car's $5,000 less or do whatever, you know, this is just industry. You know, I know it sucks and it's easy for me to say, you know, sorry, you're paying the $1,500 because, you know, you bought it 5 days too early. I have comments on my thing. That's it. I'm done with Ford. You know, I just bought a loaded Mach-E and it's going to cost me $2,500 to install this. And, you know, 1 week, they won't retroactive it. You can't do that. Where does it end? If you start saying, okay, if you bought it five days ahead of time, I'm hearing some feedback. Notice some.
Yes, yeah, Mexico. Yeah,
that'll be me. Sorry.
Yeah. Let's say we do it a week before the announcement. Then the people that bought it 8 days before the announcement are going to be pissed. You know, you have to say, here's the announcement, and this is the deal. So unfortunately, there's some people that aren't happy. But listen, you were happy when you bought your Ford electric vehicle before this announcement came out, right? You were so happy you got your new vehicle. You were okay with installing it yourself. Don't let this taint your ownership experience. Enjoy your vehicle for what it is. You don't always get every angle. You know, it's just, that's just how everything works. I mean, you could buy a cell phone and, you know, the next month they come out with the next one that's got much better features than what you would like. But, you know, you pulled the trigger.
Thanks for that.
Dom, Tom? any thoughts, Dom, before we go?
No, I'm just happy to see, kind of see this program roll out. And I didn't really get all the details on it. But, yeah. Well, you got a nice new cut there, Martin. Couldn't tell with your headphones on.
And trimmed up top. Yeah, so my mixing desk and microphone have completely died, and I'm going to go buy a new one of these, but hopefully you can hear me all right through the microphone on my laptop.
Yep, can hear you all right. And it is, go ahead, Tom.
No, I was going to say one last thing, guys, before we take off. Have any of you guys saw the tweet that I put out on the 237 kilowatt hour that I charged just recently? Yeah, bring up the tweet.
Oh, yeah.
It has like 60,000 views already. So I have a Silverado EV for a week loan. I did range tests. I've done charging tests already. This thing went far. I was impressed. I'll have that range test out next week, but well over 400 miles at 70 miles an hour. Well over 400 miles at 70 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. So really great. So I did a charging session at an EVgo charger, and that's how much it cost. $150.55. So I wrote, that's it. I'm going back to gas. I can't afford to charge anymore. So I have sarcasm is my biggest, you know, form of making jokes. Wow. And so forth. Look, 237 kilowatt hours.
That's a lot of kilowatt hours. Oh my God.
So I posted this online and it got retweeted by so many people. And the funny thing is, so many people thought I was serious, that I was, that's it. I'm getting out of EVs. And you know, the haters used it and said, you know, see, this is why EVs suck and all this stuff and everything, which I don't care. They're going to have that opinion anyway. I don't care what people say. I didn't cause any damage to the industry, but you know, a lot of people, were commenting to me, telling me like, you know, like, dude, you're an idiot. Like, you know, charge at home. Don't you understand? That's how you charge at home. Of course, I got the tons of Tesla, you know, the musketeers that said, should have bought a Tesla. And, you know, like, you bought a wrong EV, you idiot. You know, you should know, you know, Cybertruck, you'd never pay that much with a Cybertruck. And, you know, charge on the Tesla network and you'd pay so much less and all this stuff. But I love the comments of the people like giving me charging advice, which is nice, you know, about, you know, the people saying like, that's not how you do it, dude. You charge at home, you know, and it was pretty funny. I got tons of comments, but look at that bill. And just for the record, if I had charged at home this same charging session, it would have been a $38.50 at my house. So that's the difference between charging in public and charging at home. So, I think it was pretty funny. And it generated a lot of, of retweets and so forth on the thing. And the one last thing I want to point out, I saw in the comment section, people asking about Kyle. 2 weeks in a row, he's not here. You know, is there a problem? There's no problem with Kyle. Kyle's just busy as hell. And, you know, the four of us have all said, look, that's one of the reasons why we have four of us here. If somebody can't make it, the show goes on. If two people can't make it, like last week, the show goes on. So, you know, if we're traveling, if we're doing something, you know, we're you know, there's nothing wrong. There's no problem. Kyle, he should be here next week, but who knows? He might have something pressing that he can't do. He was doing something very important the last 2 weeks. You know, making content on really cool content the last 2 weeks, which is why he wasn't here.
We had hoped to be here last week, but you know, we had a big Airbnb kind of rented for everybody at the place, and it was just mad how I was trying to get all the cars organized and charged up and set for this big journey. But it's like the night before, so it was too hard to find to get the time. So we had to put it on your all shoulders to.
It wasn't a problem. We handled it. It wasn't as good as when you guys are here, but we handled it.
I heard it was better, actually.
And of course, today, Kyle's also doing something really cool that you'll find about down the road a little bit. But this isn't something that you'll hear about anytime soon. But, you know, there's no issue. Kyle's fine. And, you know, we're just plugging along.
So Martin, I think we're about up to time, but so we're going to have to save this rant, this Toyota rant, for next week, I guess. I hear that Toyota reportedly delays production of its first U.S.-made EV. Like, it was planning on making this, was it a three-row, I believe? And now it's like delayed. Can you imagine that? But maybe you'll tell us more about that next week.
I've always got time to talk about Toyota. Next week. But that's your podcast for today. Thank you very much. As long as you can hear me all right. I've given up on the headphones and the microphone. Thank you very much. As always, we couldn't do it without you in the comments. Thank you so much for the live crowd every Friday morning at 9:30 Eastern. And lots of our European viewers as well. We end our Friday. I'm now going to pick up the kiddos from school. It's how I end my working week. It's a great, great hangout every single week. As Tom says, rain or shine, we're always here. And we love to hear from you and talk to you. And, you know, if you want to help the show and you think, well, what can I do? You could share it with somebody you know, maybe somebody at work, in your community, on social media. Maybe you know someone who's into electric cars and how we power them and batteries. And sharing this around and seeing the show grow gives us all a massive buzz. And if I can ask you one favor, that would be it. Just share the show over the next seven days and help us grow bigger. Thank you so much. Hit subscribe if you're watching the YouTube version so you never miss one, and give us a thumbs up as well. And thanks to our audio listeners as well. We don't forget about you. Know when we know this is a YouTube show, we put the audio online, we don't forget about you. We try and describe everything, and thank you for your support too. And we'll be back in the middle of the week with a battery bargains episode, so get involved in that. But for now, we'll say goodbye. Oh, hey Dom, say ciao.